We're going to talk about the Botox trend this hour, why so many are having Botox injected into their faces, even young women who don't have any wrinkles to speak of. Why is this happening and what does it mean? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our guest is the author of Botox Nation, Changing the Face of America. And we welcome your questions and your experiences. Have you ever considered Botox injections to repair or even to prevent wrinkles? Why do you suppose 11 million Americans have opted for Botox since it was approved for cosmetic use in 2002? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Very happy to have with us Dana Berkowitz, who is an associate professor of sociology and women's and gender studies at Louisiana State University. She is the author of Botox Nation, Changing the Face of America. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And you mean changing the face of America, literally and figuratively?
Yes, absolutely. Literally and figuratively. So when I say that it's changing the face of America, literally, I'm referring to the fact that it's erasing facial wrinkles on a growing population of specifically women. And metaphorically, I mean that it is changing our expectations about what a normal aging woman's face should look like.
Yeah. Well, let's so much to talk about here. first of all, explain what exactly is Botox. We know they inject Botox to repair or prevent wrinkles, but what is it?
Mm-hmm. So Botox has been around for quite some time. Even before it was used for cosmetic uses, it was used for a range of medical ailments. And so what Botox is a derivative of botulism, and it is a neurotoxin that causes nerve paralysis. And so the really interesting story about how they figured out that Botox could erase wrinkles was there was an ophthalmologist and a dermatologist, husband and wife couple, in Canada, and the ophthalmologist was using it for patients who were cross-eyed. And they soon realized that in so doing, it diminished that little line in the middle of our foreheads. And so that's sort of how the discovery of Botox happened.
So interesting. So yeah. So then...
It was a rather happy accident.
Yeah. And so then it was discovered that, hey, this will erase wrinkles, and the rest is history. According to your book, we have 11 million Americans since 2002 have been using Botox or have at least tried it, and that number is growing?
That number is growing, and I predict that it is going to continue to grow, yes.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just... It's not just women in my demographic either.
No.
I'm an aging baby boomer, and I will, in the spirit of full disclosure, I have not used Botox. It has crossed my mind, though. And I'm not someone who, you know, wears, lots of makeup or fancy clothes, but there is some sort of societal pressure out there that... I've got those lines in between my eyebrows and my laugh lines are more prominent and the crow's feet are way more prominent. And there is a lot of pressure out there to not look your age. But anyway, it's not just women in my demographic doing this, but women who are even in their 20s.
Yeah. So we look at the numbers for Botox. The Botox procedures in the 19 to 34 demographic have actually more than doubled in the last decade. And What the statistics show is that more women between the ages of 22 and 40 use Botox than women over 60. So unlike the vast majority of cosmetic medical procedures that are targeted to more middle-aged women, Botox is targeted to younger women, precisely because of the fact that it has this ability to not just erase the wrinkles that one already has, but in paralyzing those facial muscles that express emotion, it can then prevent those wrinkles from forming in the future. And this is, you know, very seductive to young women.
So have the Botox when you're 20, so you won't get that crease in between your eyebrows when you're
right.
When you're 40.
Right. And so the idea is that what we view as beautiful, it's really sort of narrowed to women in their 20s, maybe their early 30s, right? And so the idea is that you can sort of freeze that face.
Has it been around long enough to know if it really is preventing the onset of wrinkles?
So that's complicated because here's the thing. Botox is temporary, so it goes away. It goes away about 4 to 6 months. So you have to keep getting it. And so it, to an extent, it is preventative. Yes, if you are paralyzing your facial muscles such that you cannot make that expression for the rest of your life, then absolutely it is going to prevent that specific wrinkle. However, the caveat is that you are signing up for this lifetime of Botox use.
It's not cheap either, is it?
No, you know, it's less than a facelift. And so it's less than cosmetic surgical procedures, but it's about $300 to $400 for one procedure, sometimes more depending on if you go to a very skilled or elite dermatologist or plastic surgeon. And given that it needs to be continuously topped off, you know, it, say, could cost about $1,000 a year.
Yeah. So this, mostly getting back to the demographics, it is mainly middle class, maybe upper middle class white women who are doing this?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are no statistics on the class demographics of Botox users, but we know that most women are without the time, the resources to provide themselves with even a minimum of what this regimen requires. And it is predominantly white women.
Yeah, and but 10% of the market is men. That's growing a little bit.
It's not. I think that the latest numbers show that it's only about 6%.
Oh, okay.
It's about 10% of cosmetic surgery recipients are men. Only about 6% of Botox users are men. And so yes, these numbers are growing, and men are the fastest demographic of growing cosmetic surgery recipients, and perhaps Botox as well. But it's still a very small number when we compare it to the over 90% who are women.
Yeah. I saw in an article that's dubbed Brotox.
They have fascinating names for it. They have Brotox. They have Boytox. I've heard Grotox.
Well, okay. So now tell me why, as somebody who's not overly concerned with her appearance, why I'm thinking about whether I should erase my wrinkles. Why do you think that is?
Why do we think that is? Well, being a woman in our society is difficult, even though we are granted, you know, extraordinary opportunities that we once did not have access to. I think that so much of these opportunities really depend on the societal policing of our looks. And, you know, we can see this if we just look at any female politician, any woman in a position of leadership, right? They are held under very close readings by the media in ways that men are not. And so I think that also as a culture, we not only police women's looks and women's bodies, we hold them to higher standards than we do men in terms of their attractiveness. And also we valorize youth. So I think all of these things together make it such that, you know, aging women are not regarded as beautiful. In fact, you know, as a society, we're pretty repulsed by aging women. Just look at Hollywood.
Yeah, and look at politics. You saw all sorts of insults flying, you know, with that, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so, and that's thus why younger women are doing this, is they don't want to fall into that unattractive category when they're
older. Right, right. I think that, you know, it's not like we're necessarily told not to look old. But when you see images of what is good and beautiful in magazines and Hollywood, and, you know, even in politics, you know, it's women who do not have wrinkles or gray hair.
Yeah. And so also now, in the spirit of full disclosure, I have not had Botox injections, though I have considered them. You have, right?
I have. Yes, I have.
And what did you think of that?
Oh, well, it's complicated. So I, you know, when I started writing this book, I was in my early 30s, and I had absolutely no intention of using Botox myself. I was, you know, vehemently opposed to it. I was a dedicated feminist. And then lots of things changed throughout the writing, the research, and the writing of this book. One more obvious changes was I aged into my late 30s. I'm now 38. And so I watched as my skin began to sag and wrinkle, and all of these things that happen with women as they age. But in addition to this, what I also did was I, for my research, read women's magazines, beauty magazines, where I was confronted and inundated with these messages about proper beauty work and advertisements for Botox. And then I also interviewed facial plastic surgeons and dermatologists and, you know, other Botox providers. During the interview process, I would ask them which of my wrinkles would benefit from Botox, which is a pretty, you know, agonizing experience, to be honest with you, because I really wanted to mirror what it's like for a patient to go into a doctor and have them tell you, you know, what's not good enough about your face. Yeah. And what they can improve, really. And then I interviewed Botox users, many of whom were my age, who told me that I was silly and foolish for not using Botox myself. Even my own mother told me, like, how can you write an entire book about Botox without trying yourself?
We will talk more about your experience and what you learned from other Botox users and all of the Botox experts that you talked with in just a moment. And we want to hear from listeners, too. Have you considered Botox? Have you done it? Why? Or why not? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking with Dana Berkowitz, an associate professor of sociology and women's gender studies at Louisiana State University. She is author of Botox Nation, Changing the Face of America. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are talking about Botox and the Botox phenomenon. Since it was approved for cosmetic use in 2002, about 11 million Americans have opted to have these injections to erase or even to prevent wrinkles. And we are talking about why that is and talking some about what it all means and what it means for society as well. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question or if you have an experience to share. I'm curious if you have struggled with the decision whether or not to to do Botox in your wrinkles, or if you have opted not to, why? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We are talking with Dana Berkowitz, who is the author of Botox Nation, Changing the Face of America. And we have some calls, so let's go to Cindy in Appleton.
Oh, great.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi there.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Cindy. Okay. So, long story short, I did a dance degree, and at the end of my dance degree, one of the professors said, there's a whole body of work that I want you all to know about, and it was about facial exercise. I was in my late 30s at the time, and I thought, wow, this is a great way, you know, to do something natural. So Botox, if I'm not mistaken, disables a muscle from moving so that the wrinkle goes away?
Yes.
Okay. So we need our facial expressions. They're important, especially for high-profile individuals like actors and actresses. We need those, but we also need them just on a day-to-day basis. So when you disable a muscle in the face, you're basically kind of distorting an expression. And wrinkles really are just, you know, they're habits of expression and probably intense ones as well. So if you use other facial rejuvenation techniques such as massage, there's a whole bunch of wonderful books out with very small, delicate movements. I mean, I actually taught people how to do this, and it's totally possible, and it's very healthy. After I would work with someone using these techniques, they would say to me things like, oh, I feel more like myself. And it was so much less expensive than Botox as well.
Well, I'm going to have to check into those facial exercises. Mm-hmm. But she brings up, Cindy, thank you so much. Dana, she
thank
brings
you,
up,
Cindy. Thank you for sharing.
She brings up such interesting points in that it does kind of, at least that's the rap it has. I don't know if you found this to be true, that people who have Botox injections have sort of a paralyzed, you know, expressionless face mm-hmm. that's a little off-putting.
And so this is a really fascinating dimension of Botox. Even in that, it's funny because the advertisements actually read freedom of expression.
Hmm.
And, you know, you can express yourself. But what you cannot do is you cannot make this very specific expression where you furrow your brow or scowl. And so what I argue in my book is that this has really interesting implications, particularly for women, because as women, I mean, how many times have you been told to smile?
Oh, God, all the time.
So many.
Yeah.
And so we're always expected as women to look happy and cheerful. There's even a cultural idiom for when we don't look happy or cheerful, and it's called resting bitch face. Have you heard of this?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm guilty of it too.
I mean, we all are. And so what Botox does is it, as it paralyzes that muscle and you're not able to scowl, it sort of liberates the face from this bitchy resting state. And so this can be quite appealing to women. This can be quite appealing for those who have to interact with women and men Botox users on a daily basis, because of the fact that if we are expressing happy or content or not angry emotions, those with whom we're interacting ultimately feel that as well. It's called facial feedback hypothesis, and that shapes their interaction. So it has these really interesting social psychological implications.
I know. I think that that's true. I was just scowling a little bit right now, and I'm not angry in any way, but it's just, you know, sort of concentrating.
You're thinking.
Yeah, I'm thinking. Yeah. I'm concentrating, and it's a part of what I do. Isn't that going to be hard to read people though too? Or, you know, why shouldn't women look like they might be, you know, concentrating or maybe a little bit upset with something?
Yeah, I think that tells us a lot about our ideas about gender and our societal ideas about women. And so I'm going to give you one really interesting example. A professor who I interviewed for this book, she told me that her student evaluations, on her, when they evaluated her teaching, they actually went up after she got Botox.
Oh my
and
goodness.
She said it was precisely because I couldn't give that, you know, what are you, that, what the hell are you talking about? Look, that it exudes, you know, skepticism. And so what ended up happening is that, her, you know, her students found her more pleasant because she wasn't able to give that face. You know what I'm talking about. And so this, you know, has some really, really fascinating and you know, equally troubling consequences. And the other thing that's really interesting is they have research on babies.
They don't put Botox in babies, do they?
No. That is not allowed. No. But they do, they have done experiments where and studies where babies cannot read the expressions of people with Botox and therefore don't know how to react and respond.
Is that the only place that Botox is injected? Is in that that frown line in the eyebrows?
No, so that was the very first place that it was approved for cosmetic use.
And now, my crow's feet too, right, or no?
Yeah. So you can get it on your crow's feet and around the mouth, though that is off label.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cindy brought up, you know, there's some facial exercises to do. We actually have a number of emails and other people who are calling in. They couldn't stay with us who want to say, why don't, I guess they're asking, why do women do this? You're not an expert on creams and lotions and exercises and all these other things. But I guess it's sort of, why aren't women trying these alternatives?
They are. Mm-hmm. They are. Yeah. So what I saw was... lots of the women with whom I spoke and lots of the stuff that I read in magazines gave the impression that your face is a house. Okay, so you paint the walls, you know, you speckle little holes, and that's where the creams and the lotions and all that comes in. And then eventually that doesn't really work, and so the roof starts to cave in and fall down. And then you will move into the more invasive procedures. So Botox is just one of these many, many, many practices that women do as a part of a larger, what sociologists call a body project.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and most women have been doing that for decades, putting different creams and lotions in this.
Absolutely.
And they.
Well, women have been doing this since the beginning of history.
Right. And you're supposed, frankly, even if you've done it for decades, believe me, when you reach a certain mid 50 age, it doesn't matter. I think there is a certain amount of, you know, the elasticity in your skin is different and all sorts of things.
We're going to age.
Yeah.
All of us. Oh, it's you know, it's inevitable.
And I have a message from someone who I know on Facebook a listener who I have seen outside the radio station who says, I have listened to you and I've seen you over the decades. Please leave your true self as is. Thank you very much, Linda. But then she goes on to say, aging gracefully is beautiful. There is still a big part of society maybe I shouldn't say big part, but there is still a section of society that is saying, hey, you know, let it be and age gracefully and, you know, whatever. Those wrinkles are something you should be proud of, not something you should hide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so when we think about aging gracefully, right, this could mean a variety of things. Does this mean don't dye your hair?
Yeah. As somebody who went gray and then went back to my color, yes, that's what it's supposed to mean.
Okay. You know, I mean, this is a very fluid and shifting concept, this idea of aging gracefully, right? And I think that, and so what I found is that, yes, there is, on one side of the coin, there's this pressure to stop aging in its tracks in a way, right? Mm-hmm. And do everything you can to combat and battle all these appearances of aging. Right. And on the other side, it's also like, well, you know, there's something to be said about earning your wrinkles. And, you know, aging is beautiful. But if we look at, if you watch TV or movies from, like, even the 1990s, and you compare it with today, it's a lot harder to age, quote unquote, gracefully without the use of Botox or fillers or, you know, any of these other things, because of the fact that the images we're seeing are using these things. I mean, if you, it's really interesting. If you watch movies or TV from the 1980s or 1990s, people look very different.
Yeah. By what do you mean by that? They don't have that wrinkle?
No. They don't have certain facial wrinkles. And so what I'm arguing, and what a lot of other sociologists and other, you know, scholars have pointed out, is that as these quote-unquote treatments become more readily available, so does the pressure or the obligation to use them. And this changes depending on, you know, the social location, depending on the, you know, the city, you know, cities like Miami, where I grew up, and Los Angeles. I spoke with someone in Sydney recently, who said that the pressure to use Botox is just more apparent in particular places.
Yeah, so
some of it might have to do with the sun.
So let's talk a little bit about this pressure. I mean, is that coming from magazines or the media? Where's that pressure coming from?
It's, you know, it's funny because it comes from everywhere and nowhere all at once. I think it comes from a lot of different places. I think that we never really make decisions about what we do with our bodies that are free from any cultural influences or any structurally created demand. And so I think in looking at not just the cultural influences of the media, so of magazines, of advertisements, of celebrity culture, reality TV, all of these things, but also in addition to that, looking at the structurally created demand, we are seeing medical spas. I mean, do you have medical spas where you live?
I think so. I mean, there's lots of spas, but you're saying going there for a facelift or something?
You would just know, not for surgery, but for more minimally invasive.
Okay, yeah, there's certain, right. A lot of skin places around, so
yeah.
I assume that's what they're doing in there.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing in there, and we're seeing them more and more in every, you know, strip mall in suburbia. And with advertisements for things like Botox and dermal fillers and laser hair removal and microdermabrasion, and various types of, you know, of other treatments. And so in seeing the fact that there's more people providing this, there's also more physicians providing this other than dermatologists and plastic surgeons, not because of changes in, you know, insurance premiums and whatnot, more and more and more emergency room doctors, more and more OB-GYNs are going into cosmetics. It's a cash business. Dentists can give Botox. So you can be at the dentist's office getting your filling, and you can see ads for Botox.
Seriously?
Brochures for Botox. Yeah. At the gynecologist getting your pap smear. Yeah. And so you're seeing these brochures and these advertisements in more and more places. Also, we have, you know, like those daily deal websites like Groupon, or I don't know if Living Social is still around, but that regularly emails subscribers bargain deals on Botox.
Yeah, they do. And so, you know what? I was just on a cruise for a vacation, a very short one, and they offer it on the cruise ship. You can go get a Botox injection.
Yeah, and it's this idea of like, oh, I'm already getting a massage and I'm getting my manicure and my facial. Why not?
Right.
Why not just get this other thing? And so I'm saying this pressure is coming from everywhere, but like nowhere, because we can't really, you know, it takes a lot of realization to sort of pinpoint all of these different things.
Yeah, and so is it from your research? Is this a dangerous trend, or is it? We have a lot of people that don't have as many wrinkles.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's dangerous. I wouldn't necessarily use the word dangerous because I think that I can be a little. I try not to moralize throughout this book because I don't think it's dangerous. I think that it is. It has some troubling implications. It has some really interesting implications, and so I'm trying to really document them and understand them. And some of the implications that I talk about, I'm a sociologist, right? So I'm really interested instead in understanding the causes and the consequences of various dimensions of social inequality. So what does it mean then that 94% of Botox users are women? What does that tell us about gender inequality? Right. And what does it mean that the vast majority of Botox users are women of a particular social class?
Mm-hmm.
And so we know that beautiful and attractive people already make more money. They already have better chances in sort of the heterosexual dating market. They already are, you know, socially venerated in ways that non-attractive people are not. So how does this technology increase not just gender inequality, but also class inequality, right? Because a lot of people I spoke with talked about using Botox to keep their job.
Yeah, well, I suppose if your job in part depends on a youthful appearance, I can imagine.
Yeah.
But let me jump in because we're past break time, and we will welcome more listeners to talk about we're talking about the causes and the consequences of Botox Nation. So many women, especially, using Botox to erase or even prevent wrinkles. We're wondering if you have ever considered this. Why or why not? And why do you suppose there's so much pressure for women to look youthful? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Dana Berkowitz. She is author of Botox Nation, Changing the Face of America. We are talking about the Botox phenomenon with the author of the book, Botox Nation, Changing the Face of America, talking about the big increase in people using Botox to erase or to prevent wrinkles since it was approved for cosmetic usage in 2002. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dana Berkowitz, an associate professor of sociology and women's gender studies at Louisiana State University, and again, author of Botox Nation. Here's an email from Lynn. She says, mm-hmm. As with so many feminist ideals, it is going to take a few brave women to lead the way,
yeah.
Wrinkles and all.
Society
needs to grow up and old and accept aging as a part of what happens in life. The problem is not with wrinkles, but our attitude toward aging. There is beauty in aging as well, using what has been learned over a lifetime to nurture and build a better world. Each wrinkle has been earned and deserves respect. Well, how do you respond to that, Dana?
Lynn was her name?
Yes.
Absolutely beautifully stated. Thank you. So when we think about solutions to this this social problem or, you know, phenomenon, I feel pretty powerless at trying to, you know, say, well, we can't battle, you know, these, you know, giant pharmaceutical companies who are making lots of money off of this and the, you know, growing numbers of medical spas that are appearing in strip malls across the country. But what we can do as individuals is really important. And I think that, yeah, we absolutely need more women role models who are aging without technological and cosmetic interventions. And so in addition to that, I think we also need to think about on the other side of the age continuum is raising our daughters in ways that cultivate a sense of self that isn't so dependent on how they look.
And, sorry, how do we do that?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why 94% of Botox users are women and only 6% are men.
Yeah.
I think that we need to teach girls and women that there is significantly more to their lives, their identity, and their who they are than how they look.
Right.
This is going to take a lot of work. This is not going to be easy.
Right. And especially if women do feel as though that their job depends on it, or their,
yeah,
you know, their I don't know, their status depends on it. And
yeah,
everywhere they look, they see all this pressure. It's hard. But you know what? Here, maybe there's hope here in Stephanie and Duluth's call. Hi, Stephanie.
Yes. Good morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I had considered getting the Botox and had mentioned it to my husband, with an earshot of my daughter when she was
mm-hmm.
little. And she said, "Oh, no, Mama, don't do that. If you do that, people won't know how happy you are."
Oh. And did that...
How old is your daughter?
Yeah, she was about 5 at the time.
Oh.
And now she's 20, and she's, you know, a beautiful, self-confident young woman. She's,
mm-hmm.
So.
And you did not do it, Stephanie, and so you did not do it based on that?
I did not do it based on that, and now looking back, I'm glad I didn't, because I have learned to become comfortable in my own skin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And know that the beauty comes from within. And I know it sounds cliche, but it truly is. When you are self-confident, and that provides more beauty than something that is cosmetic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie. I'm happy that your daughter spoke up. Yeah, you know, it's true that self-confidence is beautiful, but I think a lot of women who have had Botox injections will say that makes me
more
self-confident. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And so, you know, and it's, I'm not denying that it does. Of course, our self-confidence does come within, but in a society where, you know, that encourages women to derive their worth from their physical appearance, pursuing and achieving this beauty and usefulness is going to feel good and pleasurable, and is therefore going to make them more self-confident. So, yeah, so it is a really complicated issue.
Yeah. And you said earlier you're not necessarily taking a pro or anti Botox stand here, right?
No. I think, you know, that's like the first question that anybody asked me. Are you for it or are you against it? And I'm like, that is just, you know, that's way too simple of a question. You know, I'm neither for it or against it. As a sociologist, I'm really interested in documenting this social phenomenon that I believe is only going to increase, and I'm trying to think about the implications for.
So what other implications do you think there will be to this Botox phenomenon?
Well, so what I found and what I predict again is that it's going to become more and more normalized. In that the way that it's cultural, the stigma associated with Botox has crossed over from the very affluent social classes to the middle classes. And I think that we're seeing a much more carefree attitude about Botox and minimally invasive procedures. And so I think that with this increasing normalization, we need to think about the fact that we're going to be seeing wider ranges of women across class backgrounds and across age backgrounds using Botox. And in addition to that, if it's being marketed to women who are younger and younger, this is creating a lifetime consumer, not just of Botox, but of other minimally invasive procedures like dermal fillers or microdermabrasion or laser treatments. This is can add up.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's expensive. So there's certainly financial implications, and somebody's going to be making some money.
Somebody is making a good deal of money, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't mean this to sound crude or rude, but, you know, so what, people might say, so what? You know, if that's what happens, what does it matter?
You know, that's not necessarily, I guess, for me to say, does it matter? It might not matter to some people. You know, some people who I speak with say, well, I don't understand why if this is going to make, you know, women feel better about themselves. Like, well, if this is going to make anybody feel better about themselves and then, you know, they can afford it, then why not? And I think we, again, need to consider why is it that so many women feel better about themselves when they are using a neurotoxin to paralyze their facial muscles and not be able to make expressions and not age.
Yeah.
Or not appear like they're aging, rather.
Right. And if you're right and this just continues to increase and spread across, you know, more demographic lines, then it means that that we're not going to be accepting aging gracefully.
No. I mean, look at what happened with, like, teeth.
Oh, we all have to have those white veneers or whatever now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you get whitening strips at the drugstore now. And that's something you can only get at the dentist for a lot of money not too long ago.
Oh, gosh. Do you think that we'll ever get to that point where we can do our own Botox?
I don't know if we can do our own. But, there are these incredible diagrams on Google. If you look up how to inject Botox on yourself, you will find them.
We have Connie in Delafield with us now. Hi, Connie.
Hello. I was calling just to ask if she has heard about some of the different research about some other implications. Mm-hmm. I teach emotional intelligence, and there's research out that shows that people who have had Botox, that others are less able to empathize and show compassion to them because they're not able to interpret the subtle facial reactions of the person. And then the other research that I've seen, Duke University has done some research showing that people who are not able to express the same physical reactions in their face are less able to feel as well. So they have mm-hmm. less ability to feel the range of emotions that humans are capable of doing.
Wow. What about that?
Yeah. Yes, I'm familiar with all of that research. Isn't that fascinating? And doesn't that have some really interesting and in fact even some troubling implications for the increasing uses of Botox, particularly among women, and their interactions with their intimate partners, their colleagues, their children?
Yeah, that is interesting. Okay. We have, I don't know if you can answer this or not, Judy emailed and wonders if women over 70 can have Botox treatments. I mean, there's no age limit, is there, or is there?
There's no age limit. Yes, women over 70 can have Botox, but actually the number of women over 70 who get Botox is quite low.
Because they have accepted and are aging gracefully.
Yeah, they have accepted aging gracefully, or the wrinkles are already sort of there.
Oh, right. So Botox won't take care of every wrinkle you have on your face.
Oh, no. No, remember, your face is a house. So, you know, you go from the creams and the potions and then the lotion to the to the injectables to the facelift. That's what I...
Right.
The sort of common thing that I read throughout magazines and in my interviews with Botox providers.
Right. And by the time you're 70, I mean, you can maybe remove the frown lines in between your eyebrows, but you're still going to have many other wrinkles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
or for the most part, have wrinkles. Christine emailed. She says, come on, women of the U.S., wise up. Women are told by popular media, which feeds popular culture that is dominated by male preferences, that we should look 20 for 50 years. So we should look 20 all of our life, essentially. We have no right to complain about this culture when we turn around and cater to it by deadening our faces to become rubber-faced, expressionless shells. Expressionless equates to silent and brainless. The only way this attitude about women and an expectation of agelessness will change is if women stop catering to the pressure of it. Just stop. How about that?
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. And yes, and you know, to an extent, I absolutely agree with her. But what I have found is that in some social circles and communities, the pressure is so intense that failing to embrace these anti-aging technologies can lead to one feeling irresponsible or lazy, even. And so while I absolutely agree with her, I also want to say that, you know, for individual women, particularly in media and even in politics, and you know, under the spotlight, this can be a very difficult decision to navigate.
Richard in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Richard.
Oh, hi. You know.
Hi, Richard.
Hi, Michelle. This is so distressing to me to hear that women are under such pressure. I think it's horrible, and I understand it's the reality, at least the perceived reality. And because of a male-dominated perception of beauty and expectations and strength, and this idea of this resting bitch face is particularly distressing to me, because no male would be accused of such a thing. You know, they have a strong face, whereas a woman has a resting bitch face. I mean, that's horribly degrading. And to bring it into the political arena, I mean, Donald Trump has as much of frozen.
I don't know if I want to go into the political arena with descriptions of anybody's face in politics, just because we're almost out of time, and we'll get people angry with that. But Dana Berkowitz, here's a guy who's distressed that women feel to be under such pressure. You know, he did say perceived or otherwise. Is this just perceived pressure, or is it real?
It's both,
mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, the pressures are so intense. And again, I said they come from everywhere and nowhere all at once. And one of the sort of insidious ways by which this sort of works, right, is that we internalize these pressures.
Yeah. In our final 30 seconds, what would you like listeners to take away from your book or from this discussion, for that matter?
Well, I also want to say thank you for the previous caller for saying he's distressed and that this is such a problem for women. Yes, this is an issue, absolutely. But you know, I also want to be clear, there are bigger problems. The biggest problem facing women is not aging, it's poverty.
Yeah.
And and so while I absolutely want to take seriously the fact that women are under, you know, intense pressure to be beautiful and to be young, I also want to say that there's other social problems also that are equally worth talking about and perhaps even more important.
And we will another day. Dana Berkowitz, author of Botox Nation. Thanks to Nyasia Ellison for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.